Next, we will hear from Nick Grabulis, professor in the Department of Educational Policy, Organization, and Leadership at the Urbana campus, who will be giving us a report from the faculty on campus climate and freedom of expression. Nick, we're doing pretty good. We're not even 2 hours late yet. How are we doing so far?
I'll get through it as quickly as I can. So, yes, thank you. So, as you know, the University Senate's conference has a presentation that we give to each board meeting. We're very grateful for this chance to talk with you. And this is the topic that we wanted to discuss with you today. It was the topic of the board retreat, so I know it's something that you're also very interested in. Will this work?
Need to go back.
Nope, it's going backwards. Okay, so I hate it when people read slides out loud, so I'll just wait a couple seconds and give you a chance to read it. I'll speak to each of the slides. This is a quote from Cass Sunstein's essay, or The Daily We. Okay, I want to draw attention to three interrelated social trends that provide a crucial context for the campus free speech debate. First, as Cass Sunstein and others have pointed out, we're witnessing an increased polarization of our political climate. We're seeing this between and even within the major political parties. Political differences are no longer based on honest policy disagreements, but have become a kind of culture war with no common ground possible. Opponents are demonized as not only mistaken on the issues, but as bad human beings, worse. So again, I'll pause a second. Second, we see the role of the internet and social media, and some regular media too. This kind of goes back to the point that Trustee Smart was just discussing. Increasingly, people live in worlds where they choose their sources of information and are only exposed to ideas and perspectives that reinforce their worldview. This exacerbates the problem of polarization because conflicting groups live in different epistemic universes. There's no point in dialogue or accommodation because those other people couldn't possibly have good reasons for their positions. I might just ask you to do it from there. Is that okay? So we're on this slide, motivated reasoning. Thank you. So there's a good deal of research on motivated reasoning and related themes that suggest that we tend to strongly resist changing our minds in the face of counterinformation, not just those people, but all of us. This psychological tendency reinforces the first two concerns. Next slide, please. This is a quote from President Colleen. From here on, you don't have to do as much reading. The university is the main institution resisting these three trends: exposing people to diverse and challenging views, promoting dialogue between conflicting positions, and insisting that disputes be settled on the basis of facts and reasons. If the university and our education system generally fails in this mission, our society is in real trouble. Unfortunately, we're seeing many of these wider social tendencies are taking root in our universities too. Next slide. The university is a liberal institution, not in the sense of politically liberal, although perhaps that too, but in the sense of classical liberal values. It is committed to a pluralism of views and centrally respects the rights of academic freedom, free speech, and rights of assembly and protest. But there are two challenges to this rights-based model. One is, what are the limits of these rights? No right is absolute. What are the exceptions, the boundaries? As, for example, the famous case that free speech doesn't allow you to shout fire in a crowded theater. We have trouble sometimes recognizing that these rights aren't entirely unbounded. But then, how do we have that conversation? The second challenge is what we do when these rights conflict. For example, when the rights to protest of one group conflict with the free speech rights of another group. These dilemmas pose some of the greatest challenges to higher education today, and the University Senate's conference is deeply concerned about them and what they mean for our universities. We're pleased to be able to discuss them with you. Next slide. One of the main areas in which these dilemmas arise today is in the debate over free speech and hate speech. Some would say that hate speech is a limiting case of the right of free speech and should be banned. A recent Brookings Institution study showed that 51% of students believe that it is legitimate to ban hate speech. Many faculty believe this too. But the fact is that legal precedents show clearly that even hate speech is protected free speech. The solution to hate speech is more free speech, the right to question, criticize, and condemn hate speech, not seeking to ban it. The problem is complicated further when you realize that hate speech is often in the eye of the beholder. As John Wilson notes, there's a certain amount of inconsistency, if not hypocrisy, in what gets called hate speech on campus. Your speech is hate speech. My speech is rigorous social critique. This makes the attempts to ban it all the more difficult and dangerous. A related debate is between free speech and so-called safe spaces. Here we see an apparent conflict between rights, free speech rights versus the right to a secure and hospitable learning environment. There are certainly important questions here about campus climate for a population of increasingly diverse students, many from groups who already feel disadvantaged and/or threatened. How do we create an environment in which all students can thrive? Next slide. But often this apparent trade-off is overdrawn. One example is the widely circulated statement from the University of Chicago, which rejects safe spaces as a retreat from ideas at odds with one's own. That seems right as far as it goes, but what many people mean by safe spaces is not a retreat from engaging challenging ideas. On the contrary, creating safe spaces is intended to facilitate that engagement. There's no point in exposing students to ideas that they are too defensive, intimidated, or threatened by to take seriously. The problem here, then, is an educational one. How to create learning environments in which students are secure enough to engage challenging ideas non-defensively. Conversely, there's little point in promoting free speech in an environment where conflicting opinions are not heard or in which people are talking past one another. Again, this is an educational problem. How to promote free speech of the sort worth having. As an educational institution, we need to find educational solutions to these problems. Many people view with alarm the University of Wisconsin policy that disciplines students for disrupting campus speech events. Clearly, disciplinary action needs to be a last resort, repeat, last resort, but it's much better to seek to create a campus climate in which unpopular and controversial views, even those that some might label hate speech, are engaged and challenged directly, not banned or shouted down. Last slide. Thank you. And I will pause again for you to look at this one. Returning to Cass Sunstein, later in his essay, he lays out three principles that he wasn't referring to higher education, but which are good guidelines for us too. Number one, don't allow people to self-select exposure only to ideas and perspectives that reinforce their preconceptions. Number two, require common educational experiences that emphasize our shared interests and concerns as human beings and that provide the basis for a shared vocabulary and shared set of reference points. And number three, emphasize that our decisions need to be guided by an awareness of different alternatives and by evidence-driven decision-making processes. These educational challenges go to the heart of the mission of higher education, but they're complicated by pressures both within and outside the institution that reflect the polarized and intolerant political climate of our times. We cannot fall under that sway. We need to discuss these challenges as we did at your retreat last summer, openly and honestly, and we need to continue discussing them. Thank you for your time.
Questions or comments?
Thank you. Thank you, Professor Birbuli. Very, very well stated. Thank you.
Thank you.